Welcome to Cats and Rats Podcast, covering your Florida Panthers.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Cats and Rats Podcast, Episode 6. I'm your host, Kirby Lupo, alongside my co-hosts, Nick Levine and Cody Stevens. We've got a couple special guests here today, as we're going to do a little Atlantic Division roundtable talk. And if you guys are familiar with our Spaces post-game shows, you're going to recognize a couple of these voices, and even some of our off-season stuff that we did with one of these guests here when we were breaking down the Atlantic Division preview. Now, I had the Leafs first place coming into the year, but I did not have, which is our guest here that I'm going to introduce here in a second, the Boston Bruins in a playoff position. I had them around 9th or 10th, so I took an L on that one. But we're going
Don't
to
worry,
kind of,
I did too.
We're going to go over kind of, you know, where these teams are right now, how they match up with us, what their strengths or weaknesses are, and kind of how they're playing going down the stretch here and into this playoff drive. So first, I'm going to introduce our Boston Bruins guest here. Had him on last summer during our preview show. He goes by Matty Berry, Bruins Bender Podcast, and I think he does some also writing as well. Now, I haven't touched base with Matty since last summer, so it's going to be nice to kind of catch up on the Bruins here and see what they're at. And gentlemen, just give me like kind of a short synopsis of how the season's gone, how you're feeling about the team right now. So welcome here to the Cats and Rats Podcast, Matty. How's it going?
Good, guys. I appreciate being back. And, you know, the thing about the Bruins is they've been a little bit up and down lately. Just recently, before a win over the Florida Panthers, who had been obviously a nemesis of the Bruins in the past, Jim Montgomery actually had a little bit of a meltdown in practice. You know, they had been playing kind of uneven hockey. They'd have a good effort and then just not a great effort at all the next night. Not something that Bruins fans were used to after last season's record-setting season. So it's been a little bit, it's made Bruins fans a little nervous as we head toward, there's only 7 games left the regular season. So, you know, they've been up and down, and, you know, recently they just beat Washington, who's fighting for a playoff spot and a shootout. And they have 7 games remaining against some pretty good teams and teams who are fighting for playoff position. And, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see how they manage it. Last year, they played all their regulars right till the end. You can make a case that it might have bitten them in the rear end at the end. So now do they have some load management? Do they worry about winning the division? And does it matter who they play and that type of thing? Right now, they're 2 points ahead of Florida in the Atlantic. So, you know, does it matter to them? And what matters most? Right now, they're fairly healthy. Pat Maroon hasn't played yet. He was acquired at the deadline. Yep. But other than that, they're pretty healthy. They're playing their full lineup. They have both goalies ready to go. So it'll be interesting to see how they manage these last 7 games.
Yeah, Matty, and that's why we brought you here onto the podcast tonight, to kind of break down how these matchups are going to play out if they do, and, you know, strengths and weaknesses, especially when it's head-to-head. And these are the 3 teams that have been the class Atlantic Division. We can't discount the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are only a couple points off of where the Leafs sit in the 3rd place in the Atlantic Division. But, yeah, these have been the 3 teams kind of all season long, 1, 2, 3. I'm going to introduce my Toronto Maple Leafs guest here. You guys recognize him, a lot of you will, from our post-game Spaces. He not only represents the Toronto Maple Leafs, but catches a lot of the Florida Panther games and gives us a good insight from an outsider's perspective as he catches probably over half of our games during the regular season. So I'm going to introduce him here, a friend of mine that I actually went to university with, that lives in Western Canada and is a Leafs fan, Ryburn Regular. How's it going, Ryburn?
Good, Kirby. Hey, thanks for having me on. First time on, so I'm really excited to be here. Don't do a ton of this stuff, keep a pretty low profile on social media, so mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a fun experience for me. Beliefs, yeah, it's been an interesting year for sure. So starting the year off with some significant changes, our sort of long tenured GM Kyle Dubas gets let go, Brad Treliving gets brought in, makes some signings, sort of the bigger ones, John Klingberg, Tyler Bertuzzi, Max Domi. As most of people are going to know, most listeners will know that Klingberg got hurt pretty early on, so he's been a non-factor this year. Spent the year on LTIR, essentially. And then Tyler Bertuzzi and Max Domi for a good portion of the season took a while to get going. Kind of unclear as to how well they were going to fit in. I'd say the last third of the season here, the Leafs as a team really started to pick up. Those guys have started to play roles that are going to be important to the postseason here. Hasn't been the most consistent season. I think a lot of people were expecting the Leafs to be probably tighter to the top of the Eastern Conference than they are. It's been a lot of like two wins to one loss, one win, two loss type year. They've managed to keep pace. Some adversity for sure. Right now they're playing, relatively short with Marner and Riley, Yarncroke out. Those are some important players for us. We've had goalie injuries and just sort of goalie adversity in general with some things that have went on. Samsonov had to take some time away to kind of reset himself. But it does seem like I would say the last, really since the trade deadline or maybe even a little bit earlier, they've started to pick it up and seem to be going in the right direction at the right time. So that's kind of where we sit here in third with, I think we have eight or nine games to go now.
Yep, and next on deck is the Florida Panthers for the Toronto Maple Leafs on April 1st, and then the last game of the regular season. But before we get to that, at the end of this week up ahead, the Panthers are going to play the Bruins, I believe, for the final time. So kind of a bookend week here, Cody and Nick. We get to see the Maple Leafs, and then at the end of the week, we get to see Boston. But let's open this up now to our guests here. Cody and Nick, take it whatever direction you want here with Boston, Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, we played Toronto on April 1st, and then this matchup with the Bruins, in my opinion, I mean, this could be for the division. I mean, Florida's two back with a game in hand, but they have the tiebreakers over Boston. So if they even end the tie, Florida's going to win the division. But to me, whoever wins the game is going to win the division. But first, Maddie, once again, I did not have the Bruins in the playoffs due to this question I'm about to ask you because I didn't expect a certain guy to step up because everyone knows the Bruins, you know, Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak, Charlie McAvoy, Hampus Lindholm, and like you're the best goalie tandem in the league, and Jeremy Swayman, Landis Ullmark. But your biggest question going into the year, and still kind of is down the middle, your center depth. And I believe a lot of people were thinking, oh, Pavel Zacha was going to have to take up some of that slack. But actually this year, it's been Charlie Coyle. So can you go into like how Coyle, who's had this is his career year for Coyle as well. So with the amount of ice time he's given, he's certainly thrived, hasn't he?
He has, and we've talked about it on our podcast, like how remarkable it really is at 31 years old that Charlie Coyle can have the offensive production he's had and had the best year, as you said, in his career, really. And a lot of pressure was put on him because he was going to be the second line center. And, you know, there are people that I've talked to, and people, you know, fans and even ourselves as podcast hosts who thought that Charlie was best suited as a third line center. And he's a really good one. But as a second line center, you just didn't think he'd have the production that you could possibly have, you know, to fill the shoes of a David Krejci, for example. But Charlie's been so terrific offensively, defensively, face-offs, possession game. He's a big kid. He plays every night. You know, he's durable. And, you know, he's a really becoming, you know, in the grand scheme of things, a fairly underrated player for them. He was making, you know, just under $6 million or whatever it was a year, and people thought it was a little bit too high. But now he's kind of, you know, he's kind of earned that salary. And he's done exactly the reason why they are where they are right now is largely because of Charlie Coyle, because without his production, they really would have seen a dip at the center position, and they really haven't missed much of a beat. The thing that really I'm concerned about, obviously, is the faceoff dot, and, you know, Bergeron, excellent faceoff guy, and the best faceoff guy they really have other than Coyle is Johnny Beecher, who hasn't played. It's kind of been in and out of the lineup and up and down in the minors. But so that may be a factor. But Coyle's been just fantastic. And I'm, you know, you typically don't have this type of year when you're 31. And with all the pressure against him and with all the attention on him, it's really been impressive that he's been able to do what he's done.
I mean, I can't agree more.
Nick, you got something there for Maddie, and then you're
going to... Yes, I do, Maddie. Good talking to you, man. I wanted to ask about a couple of depth guys that the Bruins signed in the offseason, or two guys the Bruins signed in the offseason. One guy took a bigger role. The three guys I'm talking about are Trent Frederick, Danton Heinen, and Morgan Geekie. These guys have kind of really filled that role in that middle six, the top six role that the Bruins kind of desperately needed, especially after losing so many pieces with Bertuzzi and then obviously Bergeron and Krejci. What can you say about how they have acclimated to that role?
Well, Frederick is one a couple of years ago on our podcast where we had a whipping boy segment where we took a guy for the season who just drove us nuts and sort of monitored him all year long. And Trent Frederick was my whipping boy. I thought that he was, one step out of the league, that he wasn't really producing much, but he also wasn't really taking on a fighter type physical role either. He's taking bad penalties. He was choosing bad times to pick fights and, just couldn't skate very well. And the jury was out on whether that was a bad first round pick or not. But Freddie's been terrific the last two seasons. His production is way up. He actually has 18 goals as a bottom six forward, which is fine. He makes only a couple million dollars a year. So now he's a really good value right now. He's really figured out the pro game and figured out what his role is and has done it really well. Morgan Geekie, I loved the Geekie acquisition when it happened because you saw some real potential in him as he was coming, with Carolina and then with Seattle. And you thought that maybe the progression would be that he would continue sort of an upward swing, and he has. And lately, the last month or so, he's been really good. And that's a really good sign for them as a guy who signed for next year too at short money. Those two guys have been really good. Now, whether or not that happens in the playoffs is a whole different animal. And typically a good team, I always look at like teams like Tampa Bay the last few seasons where they won cups was that their third and fourth lines were just really good. And your bottom six needs to be good. When the Bruins won the cup, their bottom six was, guys like Rich Peverly and Chris Kelly, and they had the Merlot line with Thornton and Campbell and Paille, and they were producing and they were filling their role, and it really balanced out the lineup. And that's what the Bruins really need. They've been very top heavy, even in a record setting season last year. They've been very top heavy with top six really dominating the offense, and they really need to even that thing out. And those guys have really come, and done a pretty good job. James Van Riemsdyk has really dropped off. And I think that was part of the reason for the Maroon signing or trade was that, JVR has just really kind of hit a wall.
And yeah, hasn't he been like a healthy scratch like the last?
Yeah, he's
games.
Been healthy scratch. He's really having trouble skating. You really see his age. I mean, his best attributes were in front of the net, by the goal line, on the power play, and those types of things. But in the course of the game, he's really having a hard time keeping up, really having a hard time generating 5-on-5 offense. And I think you might see a guy like Maroon go in there, or and Justin Brazeau is a kind of a career AHLer at 27 that's really had a really good 3 or 4 weeks with them now and scored some goals, and he's got size. He's improved his skating some, still not the greatest skater, but he can be like a JVR type of guy for them, and he may bump him out of there. So it'll be some decisions to make for the Bruins as they get into the playoffs here. And it also depends on the matchup too. I mean, Toronto is going to be, going to play at a pace that the Bruins are going to have to dictate the pace against them. And of course, Florida has that, really good forechecking and an aggressive physical style, grinding style. So we'll see what kind of lineup the Bruins go with.
Guys, before we go to fan feedback questions, Cody or Nick, if you have something for Ryburn on roster construction or players.
Hi, Ryburn. How you doing tonight, buddy?
I'm good. How you doing, Nick?
I'm doing very well. So as we know, Joseph Woll kind of seemed to be taking over the net prior to his injury when Samsonov did have to go down to the AHL. But ever since he came back, and I believe it was February 29th, I actually have those stats pulled up. Joseph Woll is 3-4 with an .893 save percentage. And in that span, Ilya Samsonov is 6-1-1 with a .926. Martin Jones came on in relief for one game. Obviously, there's that option. But I wanted to ask your opinion. As somebody, we've talked about him on Spaces, Kirby, me and you, big fans of Joseph Woll, really impressed last year. in the playoff series versus Florida. What is your opinion on the current state of the Leafs goaltending?
I think that right now the net belongs to Samsonov just because of what he's done coming back from that time that he had to take away to sort of reset his game. A little bit of that is just due to, I don't want to call it luck because it involves Wall getting injured, but just like happenstance, right? Like he kind of had to step in there with Wall being injured as long as he was, and he did a good job of kind of seizing that opportunity. I don't know if anyone caught like the highlights in Buffalo.
Was watching that yesterday. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable game. So like right now, I don't see any way you can take the net away from him unless his performance starts to decline, right? I'm happy that we have Joseph Wall, and I think it's a little bit unfair to dunk too much on him for his recent performances just because he is coming back from the injury. It does take a little bit to sort of get back into rhythm when you're away that long, I think, especially when you're a goalie. So, you know, still very happy to have him as an option, but definitely I think the whole fan base is excited based on what they've seen with Samsonov's resurgence, and certainly hoping that he can take the reins. And I mean, he proved last year that he's, you know, he can perform under pressure in that Tampa series. And yeah, I think we're all hoping that he can continue it into this year's first round as well.
Cody, anything to piggyback off of there? Also with the additions that the Leafs made at the deadline well, and anything Maddie touched base on as well?
Yeah, it's not really nothing about the deadline. It's about a certain emergence for the Leafs, because prior to the season, I thought the Leafs blue line was a little bit of a train wreck, you know, with like the departure of Luke Shen, like who really brought that physicality and that calmness to Morgan Rielly, who really performed really well in the playoffs, especially versus Tampa.
But I think Luke Shen was the best defenseman against us, Cody. Adamant on that point.
But TJ Brody's pretty much fallen off a cliff. I mean, right, that's Ryburn's favorite player right now.
Healthy scratched.
But
not.
But there's a certain guy who's emerged for them, and his name is Simone Benoit. And he's been nothing more of like a calming defensive presence who brings a lot of physicality. Something the Leafs really haven't had, like, unless they brought it in at the trade deadline. But Ryburn, tell me like how Benoit's just really improved the Leafs blue line, because prior to his emergence, your blue line was not looking that great.
No, I would totally agree with you, Cody. And I think what Benoit's been able to do, like if you look at his history, he's a guy that's never ever had anything given to him. Like he's had to fight, scratch, and claw for every opportunity that he's gotten at every level, right? Like coming up through junior, undrafted, into the AHL, earning his opportunities, got one on a really bad Anaheim team, and ended up getting to play like 72 games for them, a lot of them in the top four. When Shulevin first signed him in the summertime, there was some analytical minds out there we all see them on Twitter with their charts. And one of the more popular ones came out and said that, oh, you know, according to my system, he's actually the worst player in the NHL. So people got a ton of laughs out of that. I think a lot of people probably expected him to just spend a year on the Marlies as kind of a depth guy, but he got into some games and he hasn't looked back. He's been exactly really what you described, super calm, steady presence. He's partnered really, really well with Jake McCabe, who's another guy who's had what I would call like a resurgence this year, especially in like key situations. You know, we're not seeing the same amount of sort of defensive breakdowns or like mental mistakes in key moments. So those two have been sort of what I would say is the calming presence on that back end from a defensive standpoint. Hard in front of the net. You know, Benoit, it seems like every game he's taken a healthy run at someone. He's blocking shots. I'm sure he leads the team in hits. He's not afraid to drop the gloves. I mean, he's not I wouldn't call him, an enforcer by any stretch, but it's another one of those guys that shows up for his teammates every night. And
A little bit of a throwback.
Yeah, he's a throwback, right? Like he doesn't back down from anybody. He likes the competitiveness.
Kind of like a Mike Komisarek from back in the day.
Yeah, like Mike Komisarek, Corey Cross type of guy, right? Like he just keeps it simple. doesn't seem to make a ton of mistakes. I think it's important with a guy like him to make sure that, you know, you've got the role right. Like, you're not forcing him into, you know, situations that that he doesn't need to be in, right? But yeah, he's played his role. Like, he's done his job, and all indications are too, he's a great teammate, right? Like, he seems to really fit in well with the room and the culture. You look at too, like, the tendencies of Brad for living with the types of defensemen that he likes to sign, long, rangy, physical guys. So, I mean, he fit that right off the bill. He's 25 years old, just earned himself an extension actually the day before yesterday. So happy for him. And certainly I think with Benoit, McCabe, and then you look at two of the mid-season / deadline acquisitions that we got, Edmondson and Labushkin, like, those are four guys we have on that blue line now that that like to play heavy hockey and like to defend the front of the net hard, which is something that we were missing. So I don't want to, like, you know, I'm not trying to, like, overhype them as all-stars or anything like that, but there's a reason that you know, Leafs fans are excited to have these four guys, right? They're important, and they bring an element that I think yeah, the Leafs have been missing for a few years for sure. Luke Shen certainly did a good job, but yeah, as we all know, we lost him in the summer. So I think we've done a good job rebounding.
Thank you, Ryber. I'm going to throw it back to Maddie here, but Ryber, and these questions are going to be for you here as well. This is from Adam, Florida Panthers Punk on Twitter X. This is for both of you. We'll go to Maddie first. Who is the one player on your team that could surprise the opposing team in round one? So we don't know who our opponents are yet, but whoever that may be, if Boston's, you know, first in the Atlantic, it'll be the wild card matchup. If they drop down, they'll be probably likely playing Toronto. But who's going to be that one guy on your team that's going to be surprising to watch in round one? It could be a big asset to lead your team to a series victory. Maddie?
Well, I mean, it could be Morgan Geekie, someone like him. I mean, he's played really well, like I said, last 3 or 4 weeks, been producing. You know, he's a guy who might be able to, on the bottom six role, do something for the team. I think, you know, the usual suspects, you know, are out there for the Bruins. It you know, pretty much know their team. The other thing is their bottom pair is kind of a reshaped bottom pair. They acquired Andrew Peak in a trade with Columbus, and he's playing with Parker Wotherspoon, who kind of joined the team mid-year, and they've formed a pretty good, at least for the last week or so, bottom pair defense pair. So, and they play, you know, a little bit more physical. They'll get in your face a little more. That's something that the Bruins were missing from their defensive core. You know, they'll only play, you know, 11, 12 minutes a game, but when they do make their presence kind of felt there, and maybe that's something that the Bruins were missing last year against the Panthers. It's just some guys in front of the net who will kind of take care of business, won't back down against the forecheck, won't back down against some of the physicality that Florida will bring. They'll probably try to use the same recipe that beat the Bruins last year, and that was kind of getting on their defense and just being real pesky and really getting to the borderline when it comes to physical play, and it worked to a certain extent. But I think that's probably, other than that, I mean, they, you know, you kind of know the Bruins, they are who they are. They've had this kind of core for a while now. And, but I think maybe someone like a Morgan Geekie is going to have to step up and play pretty well. And their fourth line is kind of makeshift. Justin Brazeau, like I mentioned earlier, is kind of taking on a role there. He may find himself in the playoffs now. You know, maybe that's another guy that they don't really have a lot of tape on and haven't really been familiar with, that might be able to, you know, just to kind of surprise him a little bit. But, you know, it's really going to be the top guys for the Bruins that need to produce.
And to Maddie's point there, I just think you cannot underestimate any of the Bruins players, those depth guys that they bring, because they do such a great job at every year. I was trying to say that to our fan base, even though I had the Boston Bruins on the outside looking in. I said, you know, this is an organization that always finds depth somehow, some way. Ryburn, same question for you there. Surprise name or two that could push the Leafs over the top in the first round, and you're able to do that last spring against Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, so for me, I would actually echo some of what Maddie said around, like, if we're going to make a run this year, our top guys absolutely have to show up and have to perform. But when you look at sort of the depth we have at forward, it's something that I think teams are potentially going to struggle to match up a little bit, like depending on how they set themselves up down the middle. One forward, I think some opposing coaches could probably be missing on the scouting report is Bobby McMahon. So shout out to one of the Western Canadian kids, Wainwright, Alberta. 27 years old, another one of these kind of classic late bloomers, came up through the AJHL, through ECHL, and, you know, one of these kids that scored everywhere he's been. He had a couple looks with us last year, wasn't super noticeable, but really took advantage of the opportunity this year. He's got 14 goals, 9 assists, 23 points in 49 games, and that's playing up and down the lineup. So he's played on the fourth line, he's played on the first line, he's played on the left side, he's played on the right side. He's a really good skater, kid that's got some good size to him, 6'2", 210 pounds, and he's got a really sneaky good shot. Like, his shot actually reminds me a little bit of what, like, Stenland on the Panthers has looked like at times. Like, he's a kid that, like, you don't want to give him space, right? Like, coaches are potentially going to be a little bit slow, to, I think, to pick him up, so I don't think it takes him very long to kind of make other guys see, like, oh, this is a guy we can't just let walk in, because, you know, he can make you pay. He has that ability. I think he's someone that could do some damage if he gets the opportunity. And again, just with the way that matchups sometimes go, he's someone you could put in a position to potentially exploit some of the weaker guys on the other team. So that's my pick.
These are two teams that I've been watching a little bit closer here. The Bruins and Leafs, the secondary scoring has been key. And the Leafs have really turned it up in this calendar year 2024, playing a lot better hockey than they were at the beginning of the year. We've got one kind of final question for Matty before we let him go. I know Ryburn's going to join us here after the next segment here, because we're going to lead into the Leafs and Panthers on Monday night. So take it away there, Nick, for kind of the final question for Matty. I'm really interested to see what he has to say here on this one.
So Jamie from our spaces.
Oh, good at Lord.
It's an all right question. We've edited it.
At Dragons underscore Quest asks, who would be your preferred round one matchup?
Well, I mean, I think if I had to pick a team, it'd be Washington Capitals. You know, I think Washington's had a surprising second half of the year. I considered them to be one of the bottom teams in the league when the season started. Didn't expect much from them. They've been able to gut it out and really stay within playoff contention. I would say if I had to pick a team, it would be them. I really am afraid of the Detroit Red Wings. Have had the Bruins number this year. I mean, they've beaten the Bruins multiple times this season. And they seem to create a little bit of problems with Boston. And so I really don't know if I really want to see them. And I'm not one of those people who just automatically assumes we'll beat the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Toronto Maple Leafs scare the hell out of me every single season. I feel like every single season is going to be the season they finally get over the hump and just and just smoke the Bruins. And I think that this could be the year that might happen, because I just don't know if the Bruins offensively can have the same firepower as Toronto, and if they're playing on all cylinders, they really scare me. They really do. And I think that eventually there's going to be a season where it happens for Toronto, and, you know, the stars may align in this kind of season to kind of overtake the Bruins in the first round. So I would say probably Washington, just because I just don't think Washington's as talented as the other teams. And I think the Bruins would, you know, have a fairly easy time getting by them. But Detroit is a sneaky team when it comes to the Bruins, and they've beaten them a few times, and it's not a team that really excites me when a proposed first-round matchup.
Well, Matty, I want to thank you for your time today here as we segue into our next segment. I'm going to have up Matty's, all his social media handles in our ad description there. You can follow him on Twitter, X, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook as well. So we'll have that all up there in our ad description. But before we segue into our next segment, I just want to let everyone know Panthers fever is here. Are you geared up? Caneswear and Davie is the place for all your Florida Panthers needs. They have the latest gear for our favorite NHL team. Jerseys, polos, t-shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. Caneswear has you covered. Stop by their store in Davie or PanthersWear.com. Again, that's PanthersWear, WEAR.com for all your Panthers gear. All right, we're going to kind of segue into a little bit more Leafs and Panthers here in this segment. And Cody's got a couple things to get off his chest here recently about the Florida Panthers. But just want to give a shout out to another commenter here, Ryan, that wrote in. From north of the border here. It was a Boston question there for Maddie, but I kind of want to propose it to Ryburn because you didn't get a chance to answer this. Do you have any preferred kind of playoff matchup seeding that you would ideally like to see in the first round?
Yeah, so to be totally honest, I don't have really any preference. So, you know, over the last several years, obviously the Leafs up until last year have struggled to get past the first round. Lots of demons with Tampa and Boston. And now, I mean, last year, obviously Florida beat us. So we definitely, I would say, got the monkey off our back against Tampa. They still really scare me. Like Andre Vasilevsky is a playoff legend. So I think Tampa Bay has as good a chance as anyone does against any matchup, really, too. Like we've all seen what they've done.
And Ryber, they don't care about home ice advantage or what seed they are. They don't care.
No. They got the experienced coach. They got their core of star players that are still, you know, clicking along pretty good considering. So you know, I think they're dangerous. I think Florida's dangerous. We've seen the year that Florida's had. You know, their forechecking is something that Toronto struggled with last year. And I know that's something we'll talk about some more in a few minutes here, probably. And then, I mean, Boston's always seemed to kind of have had our number in the playoffs. So they've had an excellent year as well.
Maddie said they've been having problems with Detroit this year. Is there a team you don't want to see? Obviously, maybe the team's at the top, but there's like maybe one that you've had a better record against head-to-head or just kind of meets your eye a little bit of like, okay, I'd like to see that team in the first round. If you drop down below Tampa and you're playing someone that is number one, or if you'd rather see, who would you rather see? If you, like, you know what I mean? Like if you're in the 2-3 spot or the wild card, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think the wild card spot, I'd probably take the Rangers playing them number one. I wouldn't mind that. And part of that too, is just like getting to see a different team in the first round, right? Like it, to me, the sort of repetitiveness that we've seen over the years gets a little bit old. So, I mean, I would welcome that challenge. You know, not scared of teams like Detroit or Washington, really. I mean, respect them obviously still, but yeah, like I don't think we've had the same issues with those two wildcard teams. And then, yeah, like if we're talking Atlantic Division, then I don't really have a preference. You have to beat the best to win the Stanley Cup. So bring on whoever it's going to be.
Yep. And it could be back to back. Whatever team gets out of that first round matchup, you're going to have to play that situation. So if Florida, you know, beats, say, Toronto there, Cody, then they're going to have to maybe play Boston right after. Cody?
I mean, either way, there's going to be a couple good teams. Look at the East, look at the West. There's going to be a couple good teams losing in the first round this year. So, and I mean, in the West, there's going to be a cup contender that loses in the first round, if that's even crazy enough. I mean, but we're going to segue. I have not been able to watch the past couple games in the Panther games because...
Let our audience know.
extenuating circumstances, I should say. But I've recently been able to watch the last couple games. And there's a particular line that has driven my ire. And it happens to be none other than our, I think a lot of people love this line because it's our tough line, or I guess our scrappy line, the one that gets all the scrums, that gets all like the little penalties and stuff. The line that the rest of the league hates, which is the second line. And boy, have they been horrible.
Now, when you talk our second line, Cody, they've been doing a little bit different things with the wingers there, but there's the two constant guys that are on that.
There's two constants, and they're the constant reasons why the goals are happening. Mainly number nine, Sam Bennett.
I'm totally with you, Cody.
Just, yeah, like this is, Am I crazy to say this is his worst three-game stretch as a Panther? I can't think of any other ones.
I know we use that hyperboles and these
I
different
don't think I
analogies,
am in this case.
but I think you, but you use it a fair amount on post-game. Is this the worst five? Is this the worst three-game stretch? But with Sam Bennett, if you're looking at defensively, which I'm looking at number one, and offense, again, this is a player that's never eclipsed 50 points in his NHL career. And I think our fan base would be blown away by that. Flames fans that used to know who Sam Bennett was that saw him come over with play with Jonathan Huberdeau and Matthew Tkachuk, they might be shocked. No, that he hasn't eclipsed 50 points. But I'm talking about defensively, Cody. And yeah, I think you're right. These last three-game stretch plus, this might be some of his worst hockey that he's played with as a Panthers. Is it concerning? Yes. Do I think he can turn it around come playoff time? Yes. But if he doesn't, we're in trouble.
I mean, it's just the amount of puck watching he's doing, and as a center, especially in this sort of defensive system where it's a man-to-man system, and the center, once again, it's in the name. It's the most important guy on the ice besides the goalie is the center, because the center connects the D to the wingers and is, once again, the center of it all. And defensively, Sam Bennett has been horrible. I mean, you go back to the Boston game. Mm-hmm. The first goal, the Charlie McAvoy goal late in the first, you can go watch it. There's a 20-30 second clip, and all four of us watched it, that he did not take his eyes off the puck. And that is not a good thing, because you go watch Alexander Barkov, Anton Lundell, Kevin Stenlund. They are not puck locked for that long at all. Once they realize where it's at and the play's kind of like there's a little scrum in the corner, so the play's kind of like stopping, they scan real around the ice and sees what's happening. Where are the Bruins positioned? And then they change their position based off that. Bennett gets absolutely puck locked, and his man, of course, is the most dangerous guy on the ice at the time, and Charlie McAvoy.
Yeah, we talk about KYP in our community a lot. Cody and Nick and Ryburn know your personnel, but it's not just the personnel that's on your roster. I think what's hurt us over the stretch, and everyone's happy now with the big win over Detroit, and maybe that'll carry over and some of that mojo momentum into Eastern Canada, but these losses were really affecting a lot of our fan base. But it's like, we're the ones that are kind of breaking it down and what we're seeing. Yeah, and it's the second line, Nick. And it's things about knowing your personnel. It's Charlie McAvoy's on the ice. David Pastrnak.
Pastrnak. I don't think it's anything structural with our defense.
It isn't.
It's mental breakdowns. And like you said, and like I said, Sherby, on the post-game spaces versus Boston, that, you know, it's leaving guys open. It's puck watching. And again, you pointed out, Kirby, on that, the play with Belenkis where he got hit by Marchand behind the net, kind of lost his head, just kind of floated around and left Pastrnak all alone out in front. But obviously you can't leave David Pastrnak alone. He's the best player probably on the ice for both teams. And as far as that particular goal for Charlie McAvoy, you're absolutely right. It is just pure puck watching. It's nothing structural. That's why my concern hasn't really been too high, because they're just really making mistakes that they haven't really made. It's not a structural breakdown, or
I don't think it's lack of effort. Some fans disagree with me. They think it's been lack of effort over the last week or two.
I think it's lapses. It's a mental lapse, and I think for a short period of time in this stretch, it has been, I wouldn't say lack of effort, but a lack of intensity.
Okay. Yes. And speaking of lack of effort, that brings me to my second point. Who was it? Pollock goal for the Islanders. Not the disallowed one, the one right after that. And let me preface this by saying this. 75%, about 85% of this goal is on Nico Mikkola. Let me preface it by saying that. But the effort thing is, you can see there's, and it's perfect. You can go on the highlight reel in Sportsnet on YouTube and watch it. There is a, I love this camera frame because it shows me the entire ice, like towards like the opposite of the ice. And it shows Bennett kind of like not,
he wasn't back checking.
Not back checking.
He was floating in the neutral zone, and the puck got turned over, and then he started back checking. And Kirby, We've seen many times Sam Bennett can make a case. He backchecks the hardest out of anybody on the team most nights. And I think that was more of a lapse. Like, hey, it's a 2-on-1 in the corner with Mikkel and Verhage. More than likely, most times they come away with that puck. He's looking for that stretch pass, and he's in the neutral zone. But regardless, Sam Bennett, again, he lost his stick. I was at the game. He picked up his stick, and then he started kind of floating in the neutral zone a little bit. He was coming back to the play, but once the pass was made to Pulak, he really turned his ears, but it was too late.
Yeah.
And then that's the thing. Bennett's usually not late. He's usually on the spot there. Barkov does it every single game pretty well for 82-game stretch. Bennett's right there with him, but this last little stretch there, I don't know what's fall off in Bennett's game. And it's not that he's been injured or out of the lineup or anything like that. We've seen how he looked coming back into the lineup in the playoffs last year.
In the offensive zone, it is mainly just some mental lapses and in the defensive zone, like along the walls and, you know, the forecheck, particularly these last couple games.
And you can't have that with the defense not healthy now with Aaron Ekblad back, his big game and return against Detroit. That's very beneficial and helpful. But you can't just be like, okay, Aaron Ekblad's back. We're fine. Bennett's got to return.
And here's the other thing. Alexander Barkov can't play 60 minutes a night. Like,
I wish we could.
I wish he could, but he can't. And this guy, he just helps so much. I know there's been a lot of hate on Alexander Barkov, right? But you could tell when he's not in the lineup.
Yeah.
And
I think there's hate on Alexander Barkov for the fans that are always going to kind of crap on him. But the other fans see kind of what he does in all three zones and plays on special teams.
Like you saw what he did against Carolina. I could count countless times. He's coming down low to support the puck. He's winning puck battles, stick checks, zone entries on the power play.
Zone exit, zone entries.
Zone, and particularly against Carolina, when he'd come down low in the zone to support, and he'd start the breakout quite often because our defense, like guys like Staal, Mahura, and Gudas last year, they didn't particularly move terrifically. And there's some plays against Carolina that Barkov started the breakout and it led to some odd man rushes, and particularly with the defenseman joining the rush.
I want to bring Ryburn into this discussion, and we've got the Leafs here for two matchups, Monday, April 1st, whenever you're listening to this recording, and then the last game of the regular season and a potential playoff matchup in the first round, if there's a 2-3 matchup, is a distinct possibility at this point. What have you kind of seen, Ryburn? You watched a little film with us as well before this recording. How can the Leafs counteract what the Panthers bring, but maybe like we're talking defensively and things with Sam Bennett. I've watched a little bit of the Leafs here of late, and they're doing a good job of holding the line, getting zone time. I watched that Washington game where they're on the road. They were just buzzing around the Capitals, and the Capitals are playing good hockey right now, and they're trying to get into the playoffs. So this is not a non-playoff team that we're talking about here. And they just kind of ran Washington out of the building that night. And I think if the Panthers are not tight to coverage, not getting pucks out, not having puck support in their own zone, the Leafs can make them pay, and that's a little concerning for me.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think, you know, what's we talk about Florida's forechecking so much, like that's really the where their bread and butter is. I think I'm not sure, like, you know, we watched the film yesterday. Trying to sort of figure out what's been missing specifically with that second line on some of those goals, some of those plays. I don't have any doubt in my mind that a guy like Sam Bennett's going to come back and come back hard. I totally agree that, you know, most nights he is probably the hardest. I would say hardest back checker and a forechecker some nights, right? Like he plays a strong, strong 2A game. So I think for the Leafs to counteract that, like, first of all, you have to prepare for that. Like, you have to assume that that's what you're going to get from the Florida Panthers at this point. Like, they've been pretty consistent. So yeah, I mean, you have to prepare for that. What can they do about it? I think when you look at the way that their back end is constructed, they defend the front of the net well now, which is something that they didn't do as well in years previous. Last year it was a challenge at points. And it's even been a challenge this year at points. It's just, I think, something that they've recently gotten more consistent at. But when you're facing an aggressive forechecking team like that, and especially like the Panthers have found a way to not only like forecheck really hard and kind of turn the puck or get the puck back, sorry, not turn it over, but they're very opportunistic, right? Like they make you pay. Like it seems there's been a lot of games where it seems like even if you've had the bulk of the scoring chances, I felt this way in the playoffs last year, actually, against the Panthers, right? Like there was games where I felt like we had great chances, but every mistake that we made in our own end, you guys made us pay for. So
I think
Seattle was the other team. Go ahead.
There's a stat, and I think this was the case last year as it is this year. I think we're top of the league in goals 5 seconds or less off of turnovers.
Yeah, so saw that actually today or yesterday. I saw that, I think, Nick, something like that anyway.
So last year in the playoffs, it was Florida, Seattle, and I'm forgetting the other one.
There's a correlation to that. Obviously, the aggressive forecheck, and obviously we saw last year the defense were activating quite a bit, and they activate quite a bit this year, not just joining the rush, but on the forecheck as well, which led to the offensive success of our defensemen, in particular Brandon Montour last year. But there also is a downside to that. Like, there is an adjustment that can be made, and I do want to point out, Ryburn, we talked about this a little bit last night, in Game 3 last year of the Toronto-Florida series, go take a look at the beginning of that game. The defensemen are pinching down on the forecheck, the Panthers. The Leafs started utilizing that stretch pass and that pass off the wall, buying some more time by skating a little bit lower away from the play and then chipping off the boards. And you see that there was a Matthews crossbar at the beginning of the game and then a Lafferty goal at the beginning of that game. And obviously, the forwards, like you said, Kirby, they have to back check on that particular play. Eric Staal, he wasn't back checking. He wasn't quick enough, basically, and led to an odd man rush. So I think the forecheck is a key element of Florida's game, but there is a way that teams can kind of subside that. And by utilizing the stretch pass, and I don't want to say eliminating the neutral zone, like, for example, like when we defend the lead and we kind of sit back a little bit more, but defending the neutral zone, because I think Florida does have a tendency at times to struggle with opposing teams forecheck and some plays along the walls in the offensive zone, talking about the defense core itself.
Those are some great points, Nick. And I think a key there is your defense activating, like moving up with the forecheck. So that's actually why I mentioned like how important it is to defend the front of the net, because I think if you're leaving lanes open, like if those forecheckers can go and get that puck and then bring it back to those defensemen that are attacking, like that's where you get the Montours getting really, really, really good clean looks. And that's not what you want. But the second piece, I think that's going to be key to defending the forecheck and hopefully preventing pucks from being coughed up in the first place, if you're Toronto, is it's where like the handedness comes in, right? So we've talked about this a few times on Spaces. Usually the best way to defend a forecheck like Florida's, like it's, I guess generically you'd call it like the 2-on-2 stack in most cases, is it's that cross ice pass. It's that quick, like the defender's got to get back, get the puck, and then move it to the other side. And in order to do that fast enough to not make a mistake and not really, really pay in those corners, I think that's where the handedness comes in. I think a lot of people believe that sometimes too much is made of guys playing on their offhand. But I think when you're in the NHL, like split seconds count, and the split second it takes a guy who is left-handed but forced to play on his right to either change his body positioning or just take the puck from backhand to forehand in order to make a good play, that matters. Like that could be all the time that Alexander Barkov needs or Sam Bennett needs to get in there and force you to make a mistake, right? So
especially the Barkov and Reinhardt line before Cody jumps back in there. Go ahead, Ryber.
Exactly. Well, I was just gonna say, I think that's where you'll see sort of a sneaky acquisition like Lyubushkin sort of fortifying that right side, right? Like we've got Lyubushkin, Liljegren, who can move the puck, and then Connor Timmins has actually been getting some ice time as well. So I think
he's getting a good run right now.
He is, and like I think the more opportunity that you have to have balance on the left and right sides and then just really make a point to play with structure and move that puck, like execute that that cross ice, whether it's left, right, or right to left pass.
Yep.
That's
what I wanted to ask you a question, Ryber, because I've been watching Toronto over the last couple of weeks, and one of the things I noticed in particular with their breakout is F1 typically they like to come down low, support the play obviously, and kind of chip it to the defense, and then they do like that kind of weak side exit, right?
Yep.
Obviously, with the hands of the defense, has that improved at all with like the addition of like Joel Edmondson or Lyubushkin? Obviously, kind of getting those right-handed D versus left-handed D a little bit more situated. Not exactly what you want, but better than what it was.
Yeah, I think it's better than what it was. Like, I think they've got to the point where like they're allowing guys in that situation to sort of take the pressure off a little bit. And we haven't seen a ton of a guy like Joel Edmondson yet. He's dealing with a minor injury right now, so he's been out the last couple of games. But like, I think what made him so attractive and what's going to make him effective is just like his size, and just like he's got a little bit of like cerebralness to his game, right? He's pretty calm. He's experienced, and like when you're dealing with a team that's super aggressive and physical on the forecheck, like, not everybody reacts to it well. I think the attributes that you want to look for in that situation are A, like the physical ability to take that punishment, and B, the mindset to be able to stay calm, not panic, and make a smart
recover.
Like simple, smart, strong play is key in that situation. And I think that's one of Joel Edmondson's strengths. You're not going to see him, you know, dangling through forecheckers or forwards, moving the puck up the ice. That's like, he's going to absorb the contact, then make a quick, smart play, chip up the boards, quick D to D pass. Like, that's what's going to be his bread and butter. And I think that's going to be like part of the recipe for success when you're talking about playing the Florida Panthers, if we're going to have success, is that mindset.
Yeah.
Cody, jump in.
And they're basically, and to counteract another point, is like another big key to playing against Florida in. And it's part of their identity where, like, you have the forecheck, finishing your checks, and, like, oh, just being stiff with the puck and limit neutral zone turnovers, which is a big thing the Maurice system does, because mm-hmm. he always wants you to dump it. And
don't be turning over on your blue line, or don't be turning over on theirs. Yeah. And he really emphasized that. Every coach does, but I would say Paul Maurice at the top of that.
The only time we go into the zone with possession is if we're down. That's the only really time we do it. And even then, we really don't. Like, there are sometimes we just dump it in as well. But the one thing that you have to do if you want to beat us, you have to commit to blocking shots. Because another part of the Florida Panthers' identity is shot volume. Maurice kind of preaches quantity over quality, because he believes that the quantity will bring the quality. In a sort of sense, like, you know,
and that's something that the Vegas blueprint was last year in the finals, Cody. And then the Leafs did it for one game, game four. But I said, they're not going to be able to repeat that. Now have the Leafs learned, have other teams in the Atlantic Division learned, Boston Bruins, you got to just commit to that fully.
Yeah. The thing with Boston was they didn't really lose that series because of like them not shot blocking. They lost that series because if you go back to game six, because game six is where it really happened. Like, you guys were talking about like the 2-on-2 stack and having to support each other in a forechecking, because if Boston did not do that, you go back and look in game six, their forwards were past the blue line when the forecheck was happening. So their D were constantly under pressure. I mean, constantly. Look at the game-winning Lusterainen goal. The D under pressure again from the forecheck. Connor Clifton just chips it up the boards. It's kept in. Lusterainen top cheese.
But and uncharacteristic things I don't think Boston was doing earlier in their series, and then it crept into their game. And then that carried over, Ryburn, to when the Panthers played the Leafs. And from that first shift against the Leafs, Panthers were on their game.
And I could pinpoint like another point from that series. Like, and I think it's the play where a lot of Leafs fans were like the yearly dump on Mitch Marner in the playoffs. And it was the little dump out in game two. Because remember, the Leafs were up 2-0. They came out firing that game.
Yes. Yep.
Kerfoot power play was like going 5 minutes in. O'Reilly scores on the power play. But then Florida, you know, at the end of the period, gets that, like, in my opinion, the best pass in that playoffs, Reinhardt to Lundell, that no look pass, and it's 2-1. And then Samsonov lets in a sneaker at the first half of the like a
Barkov.
minute in from Barkov, and it's tied. But
yeah, momentum killing, right? Like crushing.
But
and
then,
you didn't see it. I'm going to be honest. I didn't see it coming in game two against the Leafs.
I
didn't even see it coming in game one, to be honest with you.
I saw the push coming from the Leafs in game two, but I did not expect them to fall off like that.
Yep. That surprised me.
But it's just
something that.
Go ahead, Robin.
Real quick, like something that I think people don't talk about enough as like a factor of why coaches, some coaches anyway, love to employ that aggressive, quick forecheck, whatever you want to call it, 2-on-2 stack. Like the more physical contact, like when you can walk in on a team like that and make them cough up the puck and then make them pay for it, that's like, I feel like that's, it adds like more momentum to that team than just like a sort of a regular like 5-on-5 like possession goal. It's like you're asserting your dominance over that team's defense. Like you're going in, you're punishing them in a corner, digging up a puck, and then putting it in the back of their net.
It takes away your momentum that might happen on the power play as well, because you have a lot of skilled players where
the
can get
exact
off on the
power play, yeah. And the exact right? play that happened in that series was Mitch Marner. He instead of like just dumping it off the boards or whatever, remember, he tried to flip it to Matthews like right there.
Yeah, and that tough part of the ice.
And Lundell and Tkachuk just pounce all over it, and they do kind of a little give and go. And then, you know, with the forecheck and the Leafs were had like possession or whatever, everyone's going up ice. So everyone's kind of like loose and forcing just wide open for that goal.
And you can't cheat. Right. You can't cheat the zone, regardless. Regular season against us, but definitely in the playoffs.
Another point that would kind of add to the Marner thing. There were tons of goals in that series at the Florida Panthers. Again, they were just flipping like Kirby. You kind of criticize this with Aaron Ekblad, but there were tons of times where they flipped that puck out and it becomes a neutral zone game and a 50-50 battle in the neutral zone. And I think that's something that the Panthers became comfortable with last year.
I'll say more in the Carolina series than the Toronto series. I'll stand on that one.
Oh, that's for
another pod. These high flips, like I could point out multiple goals. You have the Reinhardt overtime goal in game three. You have the Anthony Duclair, or was it Verhaeghe? The Verhaeghe goal in game five. I think that obviously one thing that Toronto, I think
we also had to do that because we had personnel like Mark Stahl and Gudas that I think we're
sure
failing to realize,
but it's
on our
still end. A part of our game. And that play,
I hope it's less part of our game with
that
better
been
personnel.
Part of our game for years. You remember the Ryan Lomberg overtime goal versus Tampa? That was a set play. So, but I think an underrated part of the Leafs game and where we could need to utilize this high flip to kind of slow the game down a little bit and create a neutral zone battle is the Leafs cycle offense. I think they have it like now. I don't know how effective it has been as much, although I have watched them a little bit. But against Florida early in the year, John Tavares looked really good. They were cycling the puck, and I think the Leafs lead the league in slot shots per game. Is that I think that it's
Florida's like close to the bottom and allowed.
It wouldn't shock me. Like, I don't know off the top of my head, Nick, if they lead the league in that, but like they are definitely strong on the cycle. And also I would say probably like a little bit underrated it.
Yep.
You've got a few players that really know how to find open ice on the cycle for those slot chances, right? Like Tavares is good at it. Matthews is a master at it. And then like, there's guys like I brought up Bobby McMahon in the first segment there. Like those are types of things that he can excel at too, right? Like he's not like he uses that size that he has on the cycle really, really effectively. Like that's another sort of element that he brings. And like I
and
said,
Nylander just wheels around, which causes me some anxiety.
And another thing,
it gets guys in that slutter.
I think the biggest story with the Panthers was the style of like the play style change, right? Where the narrative around Toronto is that they weren't really, they weren't tough enough. I think Toronto is underrated in terms of their style of game. They do play our game, and because they're very good. They're a bunch of talented players that know how to play that way.
Yeah.
As far as like the toughness goes, I'm going to be completely honest with you. If Sergei Bobrovsky doesn't absolutely stand on his head in that series, and I mean, if he does anything less than what he did, it is at least a two tied series 2-2 headed back for game five.
So that's the one thing that I will say, like, Toronto takes a lot of criticism, at least from like from what I see. Like, we have a huge fan base, as I'm sure most of our listeners know, divided into like all kinds of different factions and yeah. into groups, right? Like, we don't even need to get into that, but Toronto takes a lot of flack for having one of like the looser systems, I'll say. Like, they play a very, very free game. The reason for that obviously is because of all the creativity that they have up front. And that, yeah, that can lead to mistakes in the offensive zone and defensive breakdowns, right? If guys are not on the same wavelength, absolutely they can make mistakes, and some of those mistakes can be horrendous. Like, they look terrible sometimes, like when you make a mistake in that situation. But we are a team where, I mean, I think right now, I'm sure right now we have the longest like non-shutout streak in the NHL. It goes back to at least last season. So
I think we're like shut out like what, 5-6 times this year?
Like, we find ways to score against every team. We have, you know, we have Austin Matthews 60 goals, William Nylander 40 goals. That's 100 goals between two guys. Like, the one thing that I want to make clear, I guess, is that I think if whoever plays us does not get a good goaltending performance, they could be in trouble. Like, and I know that sounds probably silly when you're talking about playoffs, but when you look at the division we're in and how, you know, we have up until last year struggled to get out of the first round, we're playing Vasilevsky, we're playing Omar Kerswayman, who have been lights out, we're playing Bobrovsky, who was lights out last year.
Tuukka Rask a little earlier in those.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. I think if you have to play the Leafs, you need a very, very good goaltender. Like,
yep. And they faced the greatest goaltenders that have been out there the last 20 years.
They have had quite the gauntlet of goaltenders.
And they caught the one.
Carey Price, one.
But that one was worse. He was down under the hill.
He turned it on.
No, he turned back the clock there.
Yeah, Bobrovsky did the same thing. Like, the two goalies,
Bobrovsky did the same thing for us.
Even when they look like they're down and out of it, the Maple Leafs they're facing Carey Price and Sergei Bobrovsky turning back the clock. That's
multiple time Vezina winners. You can add all that up. But before we wrap up here, Cody, we're gonna go ahead.
Yeah, and I just want to preface it by saying this. Like I said, I think Florida has the major advantage, especially in the middle six, when it comes to Toronto, but. We'll see.
We haven't proven it enough this season, but with that third line.
Look, with
third line has not been good all year, Cody. I know one of your boys is.
I know a lot of people like to.
For me, Reinhardt is going to be on that third line against.
I know
Leafs.
A lot.
I hope that's what I've been saying.
Last point I'll make.
Yep.
I know a lot of people want to, you know, they bash on the Bertuzzi and Domi signings, but there are guys in that middle six, right? That can play well. Like Domi and Bertuzzi and McMahon and even Nicholas Robertson, who I know is a divisive player in terms of the Maple Leaf fan base, Ryburn. But there are guys in that middle six where you've had guys like David Kampf on the third line before. I think that really, in terms of, like, obviously your star players are going to have to show up, right? There's no doubt. If Matthews, Nylander, and Marner don't show up, you're probably not going very far. And that goes the case with any team. That's not just Toronto. That's with any team.
I'm not writing that off like the fan base has. Toronto got the series win last year.
As
far as other things, like Domi and Bertuzzi, what did he have, 10 points in 7 games against the Panthers last year? Let's not act like we were able to contain this guy. I know he made a lot of mistakes.
But he was also the reason why the Panthers won that.
I understand that. I understand that.
Yeah, but Nick, I get your point. I see your point. And also, to that same effect, like with Matthews, and only 3 teams in the East have this advantage over the Panthers, where Toronto's one of them. It's Toronto, Tampa, and Boston, where – and I think this is huge, is they have the best player in the series, each of those 3 teams over Florida. Toronto, Matthews, Boston, Pastrnak, Tampa, Kucherov. And if those guys are on, and Matthews hasn't found that light switch, but I feel like it's close. And I don't want
it. It could be this year. I hope it's this year. Like last year, I'll give him a mulligan. He was injured, whatever, at risk problem. But hopefully it's this year.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for today on this Atlantic Division Roundtable. We'll probably have to have another one down the road here, Ryburn, if we end up having this matchup. And I appreciate you, Ryburn, also hosting for us last playoff. So we didn't end up doing it with Maddie in the first round, but we did it in the second round with you. And then we had our Carolina guest and our Vegas guest. So we'll plan to do that again this year. Fingers crossed how far we go here in the playoffs. But all the best on this matchup here, Ryburn, on April 1st. And then at the end of the year, too, see where these teams match up. So again, I'll have Ryburn's Twitter follow in our ad description, our show description, I should say. And again, this is episode 6. It's kind of fitting here, playing the Leafs here in the 6, as they say. So again, I want to thank my co-hosts here today, Cody and Nick, and thank my guest on this episode of Ryburn, regular, and Maddie as well, representing the Boston Bruins Benders podcast. And like we always say, go Cats.